The next case is number 072183, Borrego against the Attorney General. Shawmer Crawford.
May it please court, counsel. Let me begin, Your Honors. I do need to begin by fixing, actually bringing to the court's attention a brief error that has occurred. My office submitted to the court a Rule 28J letter on May 30th, or May 27th, I believe. Attached to that were two cases. There is one case, Bies v. Bagley. I would ask the court disregard that case. I believe it's not listed on the letter. It has no relevance to the proceedings, and I believe my assistant simply submitted that in error. So I would ask that the court disregard that. Having said that, Your Honors, this case is about statutory interpretation. Now, if the court examines both our arguments as well as the government's arguments, one thing that the court will notice is that the government does not in any way, shape, or form challenge our analysis of the statute and the regulation. The only challenge that the government puts forth is to indicate that if Ms. Borrego, my client, was allowed to seek a waiver, she would have to seek a waiver outside of the United States. Now, this court, most recently in the Altanese case, addressed that matter and, in fact, spoke about the applicability of having this type of a waiver based on 212 D3A, that it is something that could be brought before an IJ. In fact, on page 7 of the Altanese decision, what this court finds is that, and I quote from the decision, it says, the BIA also concludes that Altanese had lost her opportunity to apply for the Section 212 D3 waiver by not explicitly seeking that relief before an IJ. Well, in the government's brief, the only indication they indicate is, well, she cannot apply for it before the IJ. Altanese and the board's holding in that case seems to contradict the government's own position. More so, I think it becomes very important for the court to examine the actual statutory language of section or INA section 212 D3A II. In that section, they refer to waiver being granted at the discretion of the Attorney General. It has long been board precedent to hold that an immigration judge is, in fact, an agent of the Attorney General. Part of what occurs, I think, in this matter is that historically, when the agency created regulations by which to apply the statute, in this instance, even though the statute changed, the regulation did not change. And what created that situation is a conflict between the agency's regulation and the clear language of the statute. And if in that situation, I would submit to you that the court is bound by the actual language of the statute and the congressional mandate of the statute, which clearly indicates that it is within the discretion of the Attorney General. So not only does the government, one, concede the fact that the AG has the authority to grant this waiver, it seems also that the board recognizes that the Attorney General can do that, or an individual can seek a waiver of inadmissibility in front of the immigration judge. The only other option that would be left would be, and it seems illogical, would be to say that the only Attorney General agent, if you accept the government's position, the only Attorney General agent who could make these decisions would be either the United States Citizen and Immigration Services Office overseas or an IJ who's somehow stuck out of the country. Neither of those make any sense. More so, the second issue that the government raises is to say, well, there's no legal authority for a nunk-pro-tunk grant of such a waiver. Again, Your Honors, I would submit that historically the board has over and over recognized nunk-pro-tunk orders, nunk-pro-tunk grants of relief in order to correct or to alleviate some of the harsh consequences of family separation where such waivers were not granted. We believe, Your Honors, that this case is very, very similar to that of the Otenice case that was just recently on April 30th decided by this court. It is the same section of law. It is the same form. In fact, the form that would be necessary to raise both decisions would be an I-601. It's an immigration form used to address grounds of inadmissibility. Same as in this case, same as in the Otenice case. There is the visa form that my client would have had to have filled out at the consulate is the very same form and one that Judge Rovner looks at very closely and brings to the attention to indicate that it is ripe with issues. It has got compound questions. It has unclear. The form that is required to be filled out, the DS-156, is the same form that would have been used by Ms. Borrego when she obtained her valid visitor visa to enter the United States. It is also the same process. She appeared in front of a consulate. She appeared to seek a visitor visa in order to enter the United States. Subsequently, she appeared before an immigration judge seeking relief in conjunction with her application for adjustment of status. The board decision, the lead board decision of Matter of Ducret, addresses that the board has a wide latitude of discretion to grant any kind of relief in conjunction with a adjustment application in order to resolve the case in its totality. It is our position that the waiver that we are seeking under these circumstances would, in fact, resolve all of the issues completely, and the court or the board or the immigration judge could, in fact, resolve the case completely. There is also a final point that the government raises in their brief, and that is to say that while we never issued or didn't raise challenges to the underlying order, I would submit to you that they were raised. The board never addresses them, and as a result, we don't know whether they were considered or not considered. I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Sharma Crawford. We'll hear now from Mr. Inklins.
May it please the Court, Counsel John Inklus for the government. Your Honor, as an initial matter, counsel spoke about a 28J letter. I have not received that, and so I'm not able to speak to that here today. There are any issues that were raised therein. Your Honors, in this immigration case, the board correctly determined that petitioner, one, is ineligible for an adjustment of status because she was inadmissible when she reentered the United States in 2001, and two, she's ineligible for a waiver pursuant to 212D3A2 because she was already in the United States, and also the waiver would not alleviate her inadmissibility. There's no authority that supports the petitioner's claims that she deserves a nunk-pro-tunk order allowing both a waiver pursuant to 212D3A2 and relief from 212A6C2. She seeks to take the court through an inapplicable statutory labyrinth, but 212D3A2 is inapplicable because it deals with waivers obtained prior to entry and does not alleviate her inadmissibility, which is required for her to be seek an adjustment of status. There's a progression of statutes and in this case that are essential. The first is 212A6C2, and pursuant to that, the petitioner is inadmissible. That relates back to her attempted entry back in 1997. 212A6C3 and 212I both say that this is a non-waivable provision. Pursuant to 212A9A1, a person removed in petitioner's situation is inadmissible for 5 years. She reentered the country within 5 years. Once she was inadmissible. And then pursuant to 237A1A, a person who at the time of reentry or adjustment is inadmissible is deportable. Therefore, she is deportable. petitioner seeks refuge under 212D3. This is for a temporary waiver, which would be inapplicable here. And it would not get her, even if this were to be granted, she would still remain inadmissible and deportable. Counsel spoke about the matter of Ducret. It's an important case for this court to consider. In Ducret, the board said that for an IJ to consider a retroactive application for admission, the grounds of inadmissibility need to be eliminated, and the alien can only get the waiver in conjunction with an adjustment of status, basically saying that you need to be able to resolve the entire case at once. And I asked the court to look at Vratakos, a case that's very similar to this case, in which it had to do with a crewman, a Greek crewman who came into the country, married an American citizen, and then sought an adjustment of status. His application was denied because even if he was granted a waiver for admission, he still was ineligible to adjust his status as a crewman. And that is the same situation with the petitioner in this case. Even if she were to receive a waiver, she is still ineligible to adjust her status because she entered when she was subject to a bar for reentry.
What was the case you decided? You said I'd missed it.
It's In Re Vretakos. It's V-R-E-T-T-A-K-O-S.
Is that in your brief?
It's in petitioner's brief. It's a 14 INN decision 593. So as a result, there is no authority that would grant her an adjustment in this situation.
Do you have any comment on that Aptunis case?
I have not seen that case. Was that the case that was subject to the...
That's the one she was...
In the letter?
I guess.
Okay. I'm sorry. I haven't seen the letter, and it was not in the brief, Your Honor. So, therefore, Your Honors, it's the government's position that pursuant to A6C2, 212A6C2, the petitioner is inadmissible, and therefore she's ineligible for an adjustment of status, and that there is no waiver. And even if she would get the 212D3A2 waiver, that does not make her, that does not affect her inadmissibility. That is a temporary waiver, does not affect her. So therefore, even if that was to be granted non-pro-tunk, it does not affect her. And I would also ask the court to look to In Re Fuello, which says that these waivers should not be granted non-pro-tunk, that they should be that the waiver, the 212D3A2 waiver, should be received prior to entry into the country. If no other questions, I will conclude.
Thank you, Mr. McClash.
For the foregoing reasons, the court should affirm the board's decision.
Thank you, Mr.
McClash. Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time does Ms. Sharma-Crawford have? 3 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. Your Honors, I would very quickly address. All I can tell you is that just as this court was express mailed the 28J letter, the Department of Justice was express mailed the 28J letter on the very same day. I have proof to show that it was delivered. I'm not certain what systems now that...
We don't want to take your time up on rebuttal on this, counsel. You could just discuss this with your opponent and just ensure he gets the letter, and then we'll make... Mr. Inglis, you certainly can reply to the letter after you get a copy.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Your Honor. Let me address very quickly the point that counsel raised, indicating that this is a non-waivable offense. The problem with that argument is this. The problem is that the counsel's referral is, he's confusing two separate sections of law. This is for this, the waiver we are seeking would be granted non-pro-tunk in conjunction with her non-immigrant visa. Her non-immigrant visitor visa that she applied for in 2001. It would cure that ground of inadmissibility, thereby allowing her to enter the United States. When you look at the analysis of the statute, that statute waives any false misrepresentation and a variety of other grounds of inadmissibility. It is our position that once that waiver was granted, she enters with a waived ground of inadmissibility. She is then free and clear to apply for an immigrant visa through her husband based on a form I-130. And at that point, any other waivers that may have been necessary, if in fact they were necessary, and here being, of course, the issue of her overstay, that can, in fact, also be cured in front of the immigration judge. One waiver, one section of law that is completely different than another section of law. The section of law that counsel refers to is not the one for which we seek the waiver. In fact, once waived, she would no longer be inadmissible under the section of law that counsel refers to. It is our position, Your Honors, that Atenis does address many of the issues that are raised and faced by the same by Ms. Borrego, and that in that situation, the court clearly found that this was a method of relief that could be secured in front of the immigration judge. And we would ask that this court examine the issues that were brought forth in front of the Atenis court and resolved favorably in favor of the petitioner. We believe our petitioner stands in the same shoes as that petitioner. And for those reasons, we would ask that this petition for review be granted. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Ms. Sharma Crawford. Thank you, Mr. Inglis. The case will be taken under advisement.